And now, from the gleaming spires of Chicago, broadcasting to Niflheim, Svartalfheim, Olympus, throughout the nine worlds and beyond, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. You are tuned to the immortal sounds of Radio Free Asgard.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 139. My name is Tom Harris in the beautiful city of Chicago, Illinois, which is covered in snow. It's weird, you know, because we had like 6 inches of snow while I was at work today. And of course, I went to work wearing sneakers today, which is, that probably wasn't the best shoe choice. I've been getting a lot of use out of these hiking boots, I have to say, this winter. And, you know, it's not even so much that it's cold right now, but we're just getting a ton of snow. Hopefully the worst of the cold has passed. And yeah, I think I would rather have a little snow than this just hellacious cold that we've had recently. Anyway, so I don't really have a whole lot to talk about here in the beginning of the show. Now, I have decided kind of what direction we're going to go for the next couple of episodes, and I've decided that for the moment, going to continue on with the Lee Kirby run for the next 3 or 4 episodes, and then at that point, we're going to move on to something else. I think I know what we're going to be moving on to, but I'm not quite sure. It's one of those things, you know, I'm just going to have to decide when we get there. Incidentally, another Thor personage appearing at C2E2. Of course, we'll be at C2E2 as well, so we hope you'll stop by and see us there in Podcaster's Alley. But we actually are going to have Dan Jurgens at C2E2 this year. Dan, of course, being the writer of Thor Volume 2, an occasional artist as well. And he's going to be appearing. And so once again, somebody who I may actually try to connect with and try to talk to, if not for the show, at least for the satisfaction of saying hello and letting him know how much I've enjoyed his work over the years. So C2E2 is starting to sound like a really good time, and I hope that, you know, those of you who are in the Chicagoland area will come on out and say hello. All right, so we do have an issue of Thor to cover, so let's go ahead and move along to our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
And this week we'll be looking at Thor number 167. It's a cover date of August of 1969, retailed for a whopping 15 cents. 15 cents? I'm going to have to stop buying comics. They're too expensive. Cover art for once is not by Jack Kirby, but it's actually by John Romita. There doesn't seem to be an inker credit anywhere, so I'm led to believe that means that Romita inked his own pencils. I'm not really sure. But it is an iconic cover image. As a matter of fact, I do seem to remember there was a t-shirt being marketed at one point that had this cover on it. But it shows Don Blake, and he is prone on a rooftop, sort of cowering, and there's a ghostly image of Thor standing over him with its fist raised, going, "Arr!" And standing in front of Don Blake, carrying his cane and kind of dangling it just out of his reach, tantalizingly, is none other than the evil Loki. Yeah, it's been a while since we've had Loki on the show, much less in the comic. Yeah, so Loki had a nice long break, but he is back. Cover blurb says, "This world renounced." And we open up to the splash page where, of course, we have the credits. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby produced this issue. Vincent J. Coletta was the embellisher, and Artie Simek was the letterer. And we pick up where we left off last issue. Thor is being punished for having the warrior madness and losing control and all that whole contrived piece of shit. And so he's going stoically to his doom. And we hear somebody shouting, "Thunder God, approach thee, the presence!" And Thor says, "Whatever dread punishment my royal father may decree, Thor shall face it like a god." And we have a little bit of exposition here. The place, Asgard, home of the mighty Norse gods. The time, the eternal present. The offing, sheer spellbinding spectacle such as thine eyes have ne'er beheld. And Thor is stalking towards the throne of Odin, and there's these, you know, various Asgardian types, and they're all banging on all these. They're like bongo drums, except they're using these big old mallets. So, it's a spectacle such as I never beheld, except for every hippie drum circle ever I've seen. Anyway, so Thor is walking forward, and we see that he's standing before this huge throne, and the throne is purple and blue, and he's got like this big green wings, and way up top there is perched the All-Father himself, and he says,
"Royal transgressor, stand thee forth. Thou hast committed the sin unpardonable. When last thou battled, thou wert overcome by warrior madness. Thy hammer struck not for justice alone. Thou didst fight for base revenge. Flesh of my flesh, what sayeth thee?"
"Thy son pleads guilty, sire."
"Then prisoner on thy knees." And Thor gets down on his knees.
We get a real close-up of Odin's face here. He's saying,
"Power such as thine may ne'er be used in wanton wrath. Where man may err, a god may not. Only through sacrifice canst thou be absolved of thy monumental guilt. And though Thor be truly heart of my heart, sacrifice shalt thou make."
And Sif's so like, no, it's not fair. 'Twas for me, he did it. "Be silent, Sif," says Baldur. "The Allfather speaks." Yeah, so Sif is visibly upset here. "But what he did was done for love alone, for love of me, his lady. He now stands condemned because a god dared act with the heart of a man." "Content thyself with this, fair Sif. Though Odin be stern, he be likewise just. Thor shall prove equal to his fate. And yet, whilst he pays penance, Earth shall be unguarded. But not whilst Baldur lives." So apparently Baldur's going to go to Earth and be a superhero. And Sif is kind of going away. I'm not really sure what's going on this panel because it's abundantly not clear. But it looks like Baldur is flagging down a horse while Sif is kind of going back to the throne room. And Baldur's like, "As Thor is my friend, so shall Baldur be his staunch right arm. Warrior, ho, thy fellow craves a boon. Grant me passage upon thy steed, for I go to the Rainbow Bridge.
Whilst I, loyal friend, must rejoin the prince I love."
"We serve him best who serve in our own way," says Baldur. "Farewell, my lady, till we shall meet again."
"Godspeed, brave Baldur. Whatever befalls, our faith must not falter. Our hope must not die."
And Baldur gets up on the back of the horse. His other god person looks like Odin, actually. They go riding off towards the Rainbow Bridge. And as though he, this must be the god of deafness, because after the speech where he's shouting at Sif that he's going to the Rainbow Bridge, the guy is like, "Friend of Thor, where goest thou?"
"My goal is Bifrost, the Rainbow Bridge, wherever standeth Heimdall. From thence to Earth I fly." And they go galloping off.
And we return back to the scene in Odin's throne room. And we see Odin now for the first time in a, you know, regular size shot here. And he's wearing this big, tacky green and blue helmet with these huge, enormous wings on there. And the wings over the next few pages on this helmet get bigger and smaller. And there's times when it looks like, you know, almost like a normal helmet. Then there's times when it looks like it's so cumbersome that it's going to fall off at any moment. So Sif comes barging into the throne room, and she's running up to Thor. And Odin's kind of miffed by this. And he's like,
"Who dares disturb the judgment royal?"
"'Tis I, my liege, the Lady Sif. I beg leave to plead for him, who is thy son. He fought not for gain, nor for the shallow lure of glory. 'Twas love alone that was the spur. The love he bore for she who stands before thee. Thus the guilt is mine, and so should be the penance."
"My lady, no," says Thor. "'Twas Thor who didst err, 'tis Thor shall pay."
And Odin's not having any of this. He's like, "Be silent, all!" And he's shooting like energy bolts out of his scepter. And there's this lightning or Kirby crackle or whatever kind of cascading around.
the heart of Odin, the heart of a father doth long to be most merciful, but Odin be God before he be father. The mercy I deed to others may not be lavished upon mine own. So speaks the Lord of Asgard. 'Tis decreed that thou shalt part, for the God of Thunder hath a mission most grave, which shall be his sentence.
Thor and Sif are looking all forlorn, and we see in this panel that Sif is wearing blue eyeshadow. We get a full page spread here, and Sif and Thor are embracing, and in the background, Odin is looking like his hat is about to topple off of his head. It's very, very cumbersome on this panel. Odin is saying,
"Thy mission, find thee Galactus, and thou mayest not return till the deed be done."
And Sif is like, "It could take an eternity, my love. The universe is endless, and Galactus hath the power to roam it at will."
"I have been sentenced, my lady. No more may be said. Yet know thou this, most truly beloved. Whatever the dangers, whatever the deadly risks, Thor shall face them unflinching, for I be armed with thy love."
And the two of them are embraced. And we cut back to Baldur and arrives at the Rainbow Bridge, and we see Heimdall, of course, standing on the Rainbow Bridge, because that's what Heimdall does. He stands on the Rainbow Bridge. And Baldur says, "Warrior, thou hast served me well. Baldur gives thee thanks." And he gets off the horse, and the other god, he just takes off going wherever the hell he's going. And Baldur's talking to Heimdall here. Baldur gets off the horse, like, "What ho, stalwart Heimdall. What is that from?" "Oh, it's from Jeeves in Worcester with Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie." Getting way off the subject here. That was a great series. I really, really enjoyed that. So Baldur is all, "What ho, Heimdall?
I crave thy leave to stride yon bridge."
"Then let Baldur advance. The guardian of the Rainbow Bridge doth call thee, friend."
"On behalf of noble Thor, I request passage to Earth."
"'Tis now granted, and 'twill be done. Hold out thy blade, that the ritual of space may begin."
Now, I don't remember them ever needing to perform a ritual of space to go to Earth before. So this is obviously a contrived, sort of Jack Kirby-ish thing done purely for visual effect. And we shift scenes to a kind of almost sumptuous chamber here and a giant cosmic voyeuroscope or 80-inch color TV or whatever the hell this thing is. And we see two figures in this room, one of which is Carnilla, the Norn Queen. And she has some sort of a dragon thing sitting on her shoulder. And there behind her, kind of tinkering around with some sort of infernal device, is none other than the evil Loki.
"Little does Baldur dream that his every move is being viewed by Carnilla, Queen of the Norns. Thy sorcery screen is most effective, enchanted one, but thou dost pine in vain for such as he. He'll ne'er consort with an enemy of Asgard. How lucky for thee that Loki hath no such qualms."
Ooh, hubba hubba. And we get a full page spread here of Carnilla, and she's lounging around on her couch, and she's got this little green dragon thing perched on her hand. It's actually kind of cool looking. And she's got this elaborate purple headdress with a yellow skull thing on the side, and she's wearing an outfit that's actually not so different from the one she was wearing last time, but it's some sort of a blue armor sort of thing. And standing behind her, drinking out of a horn, is none other than Loki, and he's wearing the same costume that he usually wears here. It's called, yellow and green and evil.
"Why squander thine energies on incorruptible Baldur? Thou art meant for greater things, such as only Loki can provide." "We be too much alike, my prince. Perhaps 'tis Baldur's innocence, his honor yet untarnished, that finds favor in mine eyes. But know you this, if he be not mine, no other one shall have him."
And she's, pretty bitchy here. And the two of them are watching Baldur spin around in a white tornado to Earth. And Loki's like,
"So the dolt performs yon ritual of space. Then Earth is sure his destination. No matter where he ventures, Carnilla's spells shall reach him. Look you, Loki, Hag draws near."
And Hag approaches, and she's carrying the voodoo doll made out of clay that she was making last issue.
I have created a new image of thy victim, Queen. 'Tis made of mystic enchanty clay.
Yes, of course it is.
Whatever befalls this image shall be the fate of Balder.
So it's like the voodoo doll on Gilgan's Island, where you turn it upside down and Gilgan turns upside down, you know, that whole thing.
Thou art clever, hag, says Loki. Mayhap cleverer than thou knowest. Whilst on the earth, if Balder suffers injury, and the news be brought to Thor, then sure the thunder god would hasten to his side.
And Loki grabs the figure out of Hag's hands, and he's got mischief in mind, obviously. Like,
now Loki knows what he must do. The image must be mine, for it shall win me the hammer of Thor, without which he is helpless.
And he grabs it away from her, and he takes his hand and he smacks it on the back of the head. And we see the Balder is appearing through this magical portal on Earth, and he's falling down as though he's been smacked in the back of the head by Loki. And Loki is saying while he's smacking the statue here,
let all stand back whilst Loki strikes, when villainy be wanted. 'Tis I am its master, and so 'tis done. Let the drama now unfold.
And Baldur's laying in the middle of the street, and people's like, he appeared out of nowhere, then fell as though mortally wounded.
Who is he? What happened?
And there's cops there, and they're like,
well, right, y'all, what a mister. Send for an ambulance. He's hurt real bad.
Then we shift back to the realm of Asgard, and we have Odin and Thor, and they're approaching this big spacecraft vessel that we saw last issue, and Odin is saying,
I bring thee now to the ship of ships. Though created in the shape of a spacecraft, 'tis far, far more as thou shalt see. What will be my link with infinity?
And the two of them are in the sort of control room, and Odin is giving Thor the little tour of what's going on. But first they're having a little heart-to-heart here.
Though it hath the seeming of a ship, it holds an air of majesty, of awe to rival thine, my liege. And so it should, for 'twas conceived by me. 'Twas invested with thy father's power. It shall help thee find Galactus. Then must thou bring him hence for judgment.
And Thor is kind of pining here, and Odin's like,
thinkest thou my sentence cruel? Thinkest thou thy liege unjust?
Nay, my father, thou art the way, thou art the light. My heart is heavy that I have failed thee. One boon I crave ere the quest begins. Let me trod once more the soil of Earth, for the journey doth seem endless, and I may not come this way again.
I shall think upon thy plea, but there be one thing more. Look you now at Odin's eye, and
pointing at a giant cosmic voyeuroscope. It's this big, huge, blue, kind of gooseneck sort of thing. And he says,
look you now at Odin's eye. It shall guide thee throughout the cosmos. With but a thought thou canst command it. It shall reveal the secrets of the universe. Sights never seen. Sights of which thou hast never dreamed.
And he's making weird stuff appear on the screen. There's sort of a piece of Swiss cheese floating in space. And big kind of cloudy eye nebula sort of thing. And these weird alien things with long necks and these sort of sharp looking ear things. I'm not sure what they're looking at. Some sort of weird alien.
But such as these are not for thee. 'Tis only Galactus thou must seek.
So he's telling him, I've given you this great toy. Look at it. It's really cool. But you can't use it for anything except for finding Galactus.
Thou hast termed it punishment. Yet there be more to this than meets the eye, says Thor. Thou art keen, my son.
Yeah, you're really keen, doodad.
Even had Thor not so erred, the mission would be thine. For the realm eternal stands at stake, and only thou canst save it.
Yeah, so obviously this was going to fall to Thor no matter what. So now that Odin has shown Thor around the ship, he goes ahead and gives him leave to go to Earth. He says,
now mayest thou take thy leave, my prince. Get thee to Earth till Odin calls.
For this boon, my lord, thy son is grateful.
And Odin points his scepter at Thor, and he shoots all this energy. We got lots of orange Kirby crackle, and Odin sends Thor to Earth.
Use thy time well,
for there be little left. Thus speaks Odin.
And we see Thor hurtling down to Earth, and he kind of appears out of a big explosion, and he's in New York City. For some reason, he's thinking he's going to just take up the role of Don Blake again. I don't know how he can do that.
I must gaze once more upon the place where I didst practice healing, in the mortal guise of the physician, Donald Blake. Yea, though I be Asgardian born, Earth as well doth Thor call home.
And he whirls his hammer around, and he's heading off for the hospital, or Blake's office, or whatever.
And those who serve the sick, the ailing, them too doth Thor call brother.
And he's, I don't know if he's at the hospital or at his office or whatever, but he looks in a window and there's some doctors there and a nurse that looks suspiciously like Jane Foster, but I gather it really isn't. And they're looking over a patient, and the patient is Balder. And Thor's thinking to himself,
but what monumental irony doth greet mine eyes? Upon yon bed, the noble Balder, most grievously afflicted.
And one of the doctors is saying, a pity Donald Blake is nowhere to be found. He once successfully operated on this man's companion, the female known as Sif. Strange that we cannot diagnose the symptoms. He seems to have a feel for Asgardian physiology.
And Thor's like thinking to himself, in truth sublime, none but an immortal can minister to another of his kind. Thus only Dr. Blake can save the hapless Balder. And if Dr. Blake be needed, he says out loud, Thor shall not be found wanting.
And we see in the shadows lurking around is none other than Loki. And Loki is thinking to himself,
my plan succeeds. Brief seconds more and Mjolnir shall be mine.
And Thor goes on the roof of the building and he rat-bangs his hammer on the ground and changes back to Don Blake. And he's saying,
if physician alone can save my friend,
then a physician I shall be.
And he changes back to Blake, and he's wearing a brown suit and blue shoes, which is horrible. and Loki's lurking behind him and says,
he hath done what Loki planned. Thor is helpless now, at last. Thus mighty Mjolnir shall be mine,
he screams out loud, and Blake is like, Loki!
Thy walking stick, I'll take it now, weak mortal, for only Loki knows its worth.
And Blake is trying to fight him a little bit, and Loki's like,
fool, thy struggles are in vain, and no longer art thou god of thunder. And whilst I hold thy magic cane, ne'er shalt thou be again,
and throws him down.
Behold, 'tis mine for now and evermore.
So we get a little scene a little bit like we saw in the cover where he's taunting Blake with the cane, and Blake is trying to reach out for it.
No, no, it cannot. It must not fall into the hands such as yours.
What? Thou darest attack the god of evil?
And it looks like Blake is rushing forward, trying to headbutt Loki in the crotch. Yeah, that's what it looks like.
A pity thy strength cannot match thy presumption. In mortal guise, thou art beneath my notice.
And he just kind of smacks Blake aside.
So let a simple force bolt give thee pause.
And he shoots a energy bolt at Blake's feet, shatters the roof, and sends Blake flying. And Loki grabs the cane. He's getting ready to jump off the building.
And now farewell. I'll change yon stick to Mjolnir, and 'twill be forever mine.
Though you wouldn't be able to lift it, to be honest. And all of a sudden he's interrupted. Loki's interrupted by Odin, of all people. And he just kind of, his face emerges out of the air, and he's like,
stand fast, ignoble one. Thinkest thou to change the plans of thine own liege to alter the fate of Asgard?
Odin, say what thou wilt, sire. I won my prize in battle. I claim it for my own. Not even thou mayest interfere, so 'tis writ in the code imperial. Thou didst
not win it fair. Mine eyes bear witness, and wretched one, know thou this. Whomsoever holds the mystic Mjolnir must probe the cosmos for Galactus.
And Loki seems really afraid of Galactus.
Galactus? No! No! Not that! Oh, Kalganite!
Odin is like, you coward. It's like,
naught but thy perfidy is equal to thy cowardice. Now, villain, get thee gone. Though he be under royal sentence, thou art not fit to bind thy brother's boot.
And there's a giant energy blast. Loki goes flying off. And Blake is just kind of laying there, and the cane is beside him. And Blake's unconscious, but he comes to really quick, and he's like,
Loki, he's gone. But why? How? What happened while I was unconscious? My cane? No, it isn't possible. He'd never leave it behind. Unless that aura of transcendental energy still lingering in the air. I should have known he wouldn't fail me. Not when the need was greatest. And we shift scenes to a far distant galaxy where planets are igniting, smoldering, crumbling as carnage is unchecked. So obviously somebody's having a real bad day as their planet is destroyed. And we get a full page spread on the next page of what is causing this planet to be destroyed. And it is Galactus himself, and he's standing in the middle of these big explosions. The world's breaking up beneath him, and he's got these big old Kirby machines he's playing with. And there's all these spaceships kind of flying around, kind of like we had in a few issues ago.
The puny survivors flee. I shall make no move to stop them, for I am indifferent to their fate. All that concerns me is my immortal hunger, the hunger which can only be fed by the energy of living planets. And so throughout the cosmos, worlds must die, that Galactus may live.
We shift scenes again to Thor's ship, and there's the workmen on the ship. I don't know if they're the like technicians or mechanics or whatever. And there's an alarm that goes off, and it's going ee, and they see Galactus on the Odin Eye, and they're like,
an image doth appear within the Odin Eye. Behold, 'tis him who we seek, the one called Galactus. Son of the Thunder God, we must find Thor.
Too late, he doth speed away. He spans the universe with every heartbeat. Even whilst we watch, the galaxies fall away, and he's gone.
And we shift scenes back to Earth, and we see they're in the hospital, I guess, and Dr. Blake is there, and the nurse who looks like Jane Foster is there, and the other doctors. And the other doctor's like,
a masterful performance, Dr. Blake.
Never have we seen such skill, such surgical brilliance. Congratulations, Doctor.
Thank you.
This is really, like, very Elvis.
Thank you.
A strange fellow, that Blake. Despite his youth, he has no equal as a surgeon. Why do we see so little of him? And how is he so knowledgeable about techniques we've never seen?
I wish I knew. But all that matters are the results. While we ask questions, he saves lives.
So the implication here is that he saved Baldur's life, and he's changing clothes, and there's his regular street clothes again. And Blake is thinking to himself,
farewell, brave Baldur. Farewell, dear friend. I leave you here on Earth to carry on the good fight. As for me, I'm needed elsewhere.
And he's up on the roof again. He says, and now a final flight over the slumbering metropolis.
How many ages will have passed ere I return again?
Obviously, just a few issues.
Or will my journey end in space when I find the one I seek?
And Thor whirls his hammer around, takes off in the air, and he is gone. Next issue, behold Galactus. All right, so we have a few things to say about this issue, but first we have a message here from our friends at C2E2.
The Chicago Comic and Entertainment Expo, also known as C2E2, is a convention spanning the latest and greatest from the worlds of comics, movies, television, toys, anime, manga, and video games. Bringing the best of popular culture to downtown Chicago on April 25th through 27th, C2E2's show floor is packed with hundreds of exhibitors, panels, guests such as Adam Hughes, Brian Azzarello, Eve Miles, and more, autograph sessions giving fans a chance to interact with their favorite creators, and screening rooms featuring sneak peeks at films and television shows months before they hit either the big or small screen. Join us for the best weekend of the year, April 25th through 27th. For more info, head on over to c2e2.com.
And we are back. And of course, I do have a few comments to make about the issue. First of all, art-wise, this is a terrific issue. This goes back to, the Kirby at his height. It's not absolutely perfect. Yeah, I mean, there's some really wonky things. We have an asteroid full of holes in it that looks like a big piece of cheese over on page 11. They don't look like craters. It actually looks like somebody took a drill and drilled holes in this asteroid. It's really, really dumb looking. Likewise, these aliens with the long necks in the next panel are, well, They're imaginative, I have to give it that, but Kirby is nothing if not imaginative. But by and large, this is a great art job, and the writing is pretty good too. There's a few things about the story that I didn't care for. One of them is this overused trope of the voodoo doll. I mean, this is something that we've had overplayed on shows like Gilligan's Island and Bewitched, like I mentioned before, back in the 60s. And here we have Loki actually causing like brain damage to Baldur as the result of slapping this thing in the back of the head. That's some powerful magic right there. And, you know, and to think that, you know, Don Blake should just happen by when all this is happening in time to save Baldur's life is a little bit weird. It's very contrived, I guess is what I'm going to say. And really, for the sake of the story, pretty much unnecessary. There's really no reason for that scene in there other than to ratchet up the tension a little bit. The deus ex machina, the literal deus ex machina at the end of the story, I don't know how I feel about it. It's one of those story moments that it makes sense in that Odin is allowing Thor back on Earth for just a short time before he has to go off on his quest, and Loki just picked the wrong time to start interfering. But at the same time, you know, it's good to see Loki again, and I hate to say that, you know, because of the overuse that we've had of Loki in earlier in the series. But like I said, this is the first time we've seen him in a while, and it's actually kind of refreshing to have, you know, this character back and kind of clear cut. The stuff with Galactus, pretty interesting, and that's going to lead to something really interesting in the next couple of issues. And of course, we're going to be covering right through to that. Dialogue in the story, pretty good. It definitely seems to be a combination of Stan and Jack. There's some pages where Jack Kirby's influence on the dialogue is really, really obvious, but you know, all the scenes between Thor and Odin don't seem to be written by Jack at all. It definitely seems to be either a collaboration, which is what I assume most of this is, or Stan Lee himself. But when you get the scene of Baldur and Heimdall on the Rainbow Bridge, this reads like a New Gods comic. This is vintage Kirby dialogue and vintage Kirby characterization. And as time goes on, I'm definitely picking it out more, and you're seeing certain scenes are definitely more Kirby, and some scenes are definitely more Lee than others. I can only assume that, you know, Stan has tried to hold the story together narratively in a way that Kirby was never really fully successful at doing when in his solo stuff. Not that being said, I don't mind Kirby's writing. It's just not sure if it's right for a Marvel book. I think it worked a lot better on the books he was doing for DC. I like the return of Hag and kind of how people are making fun of her. I thought it was awfully strange that Loki was able to so easily grab the voodoo doll away from her, considering she's supposed to have like this unbreakable grip. But I guess maybe she wasn't expecting Loki to reach out and grab it. Spaceship is really cool. I mean, I like the Eye of Odin. I like that whole idea, but it's basically just another cosmic voyeuroscope, and we've had plenty of those in this series, and it's different in every issue, pretty much. All right, so that's it for this week. Thanks once again very much, folks, for listening. As always, you can email the show. Our email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com, and you can also join our Facebook group over at Facebook, because we don't have a Facebook group over on Google+. And you can join the conversations that we have over there and enjoy the little bits of silliness that we talk about there. And with that, I am going back over the Rainbow Bridge, back to Midgard, back to the snow and cold. Yes, the Fimbulwinter is still going on here with another polar vortex on the way. Anyhow, have a great week, and we'll see you next time here on Radio Free Asgard. Radio Free Asgard is the property of Tom Harris USA Productions, which is totally responsible for its content. The Mighty Thor, his supporting cast, and the various stories that we feature on the show are copyright Marvel Comics and are presented for review and educational purposes, and we hope you find them entertaining as well. Musical selections from Eden, the Invincible Sword of the Elvesmith, are copyright Motzvent and are used with permission. If you like what you've heard on the show, we hope you'll tell your friends, or leave us an iTunes review, or even join our Facebook group. We do love hearing from our listeners. And if you didn't like it, well, oh well, we'll try to do better next time. Once again, thank you very much for listening to Radio Free Asgard.